2021. I was an artist, mainly active in publication and installation art, starting from history and philosophy, photography and writing mostly. This period of working led to a certain amount of collectives or conceptual groups of which I am still part and which are still making work. The local Phototech Foundation is still active. The Tijdelijk Informatiecentrum is still a very active production organization. And there's also the estate of Casper de Mullemeester, which is all the work that I've made until the start of 2021, which is managed by Timo Becker and which will still make new work of, let's say, new discovered work available during the next 40 years of my life, hopefully.
Hello, I'm Anna Raimondo. I'm very glad to be with you today. Thanks to Luz and to Nadine for the invitation. I'm still an artist. And let's say that to really synthesize what I do, I mainly work with the listening as a process for encounter or disencounter. As an artist, I also work with listening often as an aesthetic and political tool. And at the same time, I have to say also that I'm feminist. Is actually these two definitions are the only one in which I feel I belong to nowadays, artist and feminist. As a feminist, I'm feminist since for 20 years. So of course, feminisms have really evolved and transformed me. Nowadays, I feel close by transfeminism, intersectional feminism, and decolonial feminism. To be in simple words, I do believe that being a woman is not a biological data, but it's a question of autodetermination and self-identification. As a white feminist, I'm very conscious that my fights are not universal, but it's needed to contextualize geographically and culturally also our fights as women. So yes, I would say that both are the main important things in my practice.
Thank you, everyone. Hello and nice to be here. Finally back to Brussels. So my name is Eleni Kama. I'm Greek Cypriot and I have been sharing my time between Belgium and Netherlands the last 12 years. I come from the visual arts, but somehow I became more and more interested in performative ways of working, mainly because the last years I'm working with this subject parisia, which is the courage of speaking up, speaking one's mind, most of the times in common view. This is where it really works. So somehow it felt important to find new ways to work. And my way of working around that is basically I walk along a Moebius strip. And on the one side, I'm really practicing my monologue. So I'm making my drawings or like solitary activities where I take the decisions about the outcome of the work. And then there are all these kind of collaborative or dialectic attempts where I have to be confronted with others. And then we see what happens. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you. There are some themes here that I see lying on the table, which are public space, presence, taking space, public sphere, and public time. Anna, do you want to pick a question?
I want. That's one. Oh. Okay. Ooh. Sorry, I'm doing. So about public sphere, what is public sphere? Okay, may I start or I put some other words on this because okay. I don't have a clear. I may say also that I'm making a PhD, so sometimes I will do some theoretical references and if it's boring, you just can look
we can
at me.
Tell you.
Also with mask, I will guess what you want. No, when we first speak about, when we meet the other day to speak about the topics of our actual encounter, we were also thinking about this difference between public space and public sphere. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's not it's not a distinction that we created. It's Habermas, I think, that did it first, but other theoricians then took it again. And actually, in a very, very first approach, I would say that public space reminds a physicality. So it makes me think to the street, it makes me think to the collective, it makes me think to the space, actually, yes, to the presences of people, whereas public sphere is more kind of dialectical and the collective and common way of thinking, of negotiate meanings. And so we decided to put this topic on because I think that in this precise moment of the sanitary crisis, this distinction is vital, because personally, and I think it's a common feeling, we miss public space, and we are trying our best to encourage public sphere without the presence, without the bodies. So yes, a first thought that I would say that is that really public space makes me think about the embodied presences, the body, the skin, the sudore, the smell, all that is physical, whereas the public sphere is more a kind of attempt to put ideas together and do something with that. Yeah.
It also makes me think that maybe the public sphere is something that we now use a lot in order to be able to continue to do what we do.
Yeah.
Since the public space is so inaccessible for our public, our audience. And so what we do now here even is, I think, public sphere. It's a stream online, but we are able to have a discussion without an audience because we cannot invite them. We cannot invite them to be physically there. So I'm very grateful for the public sphere.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah.
Okay, but to play devil's advocate doesn't mean I agree necessarily, but okay, let's bring also this other person, Chantal Mouffe, and her kind of really, you say, opposing Habermas and the public sphere. So basically all these people arguing that you cannot solve everything with consensus and you really need to have this dissent. And somehow, what do we do with that
one?
It's interesting, for instance, if you look up the Wikipedia page of public sphere and public space, because on Wikipedia you have the possibility to visualize dissent. So if people have different opinions about what is written on a Wikipedia page, you can read the debate, actually. And so in this case, I just happened to look it up. It was very interesting to see that this debate, where does public sphere become public space, where does it become physical, and the other way around, is public space also always public sphere, is even on these Wikipedia pages an active debate where people are disagreeing on how to use the terms. And I'm always wondering, if I read that, if this is not also connected to the fact that for a lot of people, the physicality of space is dissolving maybe into something more a hybrid state, where you are physically somewhere but you're also virtually somewhere else, and you are very much there in this virtual space. And when you read the way that Habermas looked at this idea of a public sphere, he even used the word of a virtualized space. But it didn't exist as internet. It was just that he meant it's not necessarily physical in a place. It can be a debate, but now the virtual is something that exists also. So this becomes a debate which is, I think, really important to consider, because if you imagine being in a lockdown, we had relatively short lockdowns where we could go outside, meet in parks, etc. In other parts of the world, they had 100-meter lockdowns where you had to stay in a 100-meter circle for months. Well, your public sphere becomes your space, actually, and it's virtual. It's just the only place where you see people is then online. I don't know.
Yeah. But also what was saying Eleni about the, I think that this is also something interesting that we could reflect on together, is about the dynamics of the public sphere, the accessibility of the public sphere. It's very probably difficult to speak about public sphere in general as a concept. Probably we could speak about now this public sphere that we are creating, and actually that's what you are saying, that how we build this public sphere. Are we looking for, as you say, a consensus? Are we looking for are we looking for what we have in common, or we are looking for our own unicities and differences? And coming back to the public space, I would say that one of the reasons why I work in public space is just because it confronts me with the very different, from me. Whereas often in public sphere, when I'm in this kind of situations, as, moreover, without the presence of the audience, you know, it seems more difficult to really confront my ideas, because I know that more or less, if I say that I'm feminist, more or less we agree. Probably we have different approaches to this word and to this concept, but more or less we understand each other. And so, yeah, this is another topic that probably...
Yeah, I totally agree with that part, because, I mean, when I decided to go into all that and try to also work with other people, or let's say create events in public space, you're really confronted with parts that maybe you would never want to. I mean, here somehow it feels there is more homogeneity. We come from a similar background, or we have studies, we know what we're talking about, but what happens with an entity from somewhere totally else comes? Do they really communicate? It's much more possible to be confronted by disagreement than sitting together in an art space.
No, completely. I think we were discussing also Monday the taking place, or the marking a space in there, out there, is very confrontational.
Yeah.
And are you active in there as a bubble, like a homogeneity as we have now, or are you open for whatever is around? And do you let your practices be influenced by whatever is happening, the unpredictability?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm inclined to say, of course, but
it's tricky.
It's tricky. I used to be, I think not so long ago, I used to really welcome this approach completely. So to go out there without almost a fixed plan and to see what happens when you just start something, and to see, for instance, the work Tropicana, the place Tropicana here in the city center was an experiment really with that. You just go out without even a plan, or just the plan is not have a plan, and then you see how this in the public place, how confrontations lead to developments. But then we'll get it a bit later. At a certain point, there is the position of the mediator emerges. Even if you say, I will just take it as it happens, there is a position of the mediator that pops up. And that, I think that's pretty. But then I realized also later on that it's tricky to generalize, because it really depends on the specific context, the specific people, who you want to work with at a specific location where you are working, because sometimes the debate or the confrontation that you are looking for, in a way, will happen more easily or more interestingly if you already provide some boundaries, some limits to what this total freedom of the reaction of the other can entail. And so for me, this is something I learned, that really the even like a generality of going out there and say whatever can happen, I let it happen, is already actually a generality that you impose on yourself, and it's not taking into account what the other people would want. So this, it's like a presumed openness, but there is an a priori before it, which is not really open. So I I think the specificity of where and you are and who you're working with really changes this.
While speaking, I think that actually it's really about the dynamic. We cannot, I mean, it will be fake to say I'm open or to say I'm closed, because neither the two possibilities are possible actually when you are confronted with the publicness of the public space. I mean, and that's probably one of the drive that we are encouraged by, not work with, but because, as you say, to be, let's kind of to state that we are completely open, it means to be neutral, and it's impossible. It's impossible. I think that we are agree on the fact that we are always situated and we always bring something with us, even if we want to be porous and we want to welcome and we want to negotiate, and you know, it's already something. I like to think about my projects always like propositions, because in the proposition there is, as you said, a frame in a way, but it's kind of mobile. It's not fixed. As you, for example, if I made the picture of myself, I know very well what I want to do, it's okay. But if I put a tail mermaid in the street, I've got a proposition, I've got a question in a way with me, with my body, but I really don't know what will happen. So there is a dynamic, I think.
Yeah, it's a massive. Now I don't know what to bring in the table, because I'm thinking, no, it's okay, but in relation to that already.
I mean, but if you, for your project, put
for
somebody
own,
on a stand and that person stands there and then speaks about what it is to speak up.
Yeah, you know, for me, the biggest difficulty in all that, let's say what I have been trying to do, because it's not really I wanted to go to public space, to make it clear. It's no, I don't feel comfortable there. But no, it's true.
Yeah.
But it was the only way to bring in my research, because you cannot investigate what does it mean to speak up and confront the other and just stay home, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of created, let's say, hybrid stage sets. So in a way, thinking of two mediums confronting each other. So on the one hand, it's really something happening, but then it's also recorded. So it's possible for others to see that and for us also to inspect. So what was this about, right? And in this, I thought it's a good way, what can really unite us is this common witness in act. But I tried to bring different publics in, let's say professionals that are paid, and let's say amateurs or volunteers, and of course there is the accidental public that just passed by. So I find it difficult. Of course, anything can happen. It's interesting from that perspective. You don't know sometimes. But I see that when it's when you don't take time together, the results are not so interesting, because people could just, you know, just for a moment, it cannot be affected really. So somehow, yeah, we'll go
then
back
later. You speak
later.
About the passerby.
The passerby, the ones that
yeah.
don't really engage. Because it's very different if, for example, you have a community of different people, but they are all engaged, even if it's for 3 days in this project. And it's different if just someone passes and maybe grasps something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it could be also a modality.
Yes, sure.
I mean,
sure.
It's really about what you propose to activate. Because, for example, I really like, for example, the accidental listening. For me, it's something that really inspires also some of my works. And in accidental listening, it's really a question of seconds that you cross yourself with another person in that precise moment. And probably something would happen, probably not at all, but it's another way. I mean, time, it's another component that you did with.
Can I ask you, what do you mean by accidental listening?
For example, I make a concrete example.
Yes.
In one of my projects that I made a lot of years ago, which is called Encouragement, I was simulating a phone conversation with the headphones, so a kind of very performative way to speak in the public space with my hands as Italian woman, like and those were sentences that were a collection of other women's sentences, encouragement. So, for example, one grandmother say to lose something, another, for example, the nurse say told you something that day because you were giving birth, and I put all these sentences together, simulating a conversation. And so, for example, I was sitting one moment in a table of a bar or in the Parc des Forêts, speaking about the power of masturbation, or speaking about or screaming, for example, push, I see his hair. That was one of the encouragement that actually one woman gave to me that received for a nursing. So all these sentences together create an accidental listening, because I was sure that the person close to me were listening to me, even if it was not, you know. So in that case, for example, if I start to speak about the potential of masturbation, of sex, about the, I don't know, whatever, you know, probably something you will say what she's doing, what, and probably you will think something about that, or probably not, but there is this possibility, you know?
I totally agree, like that you can produce effect in that way, yes. It's just that the problem in my case is that if people are invited, let's say, to speak, and they take part in something, if there is a joke, for example, and they are improvising or others participate, then it's much more difficult from an outsider to really come and speak. Mm. I haven't found my way yet in that.
It's a challenge.
Yeah.
And in that case of the example you give, were you hoping in a way for interaction? Were you, or was it, let's say, satisfying or enough for you that the other person would take this experience with him or her and then take it along and maybe do nothing with it, or maybe talk about it to someone else, or?
Probably the second. Mm-hmm. So I'm it really depends on the project again, and also about how you want to push your listening, no, and to your communication in a way. And in that case, I was really thinking about the invisible communication, you know, something that the resonance. That is a possibility, because it's also possible that the people close to you just don't
think about
it's not hearing to you at all. But it's a possibility, and I like this poetic possibility. You know, in other projects, I impose my sound, for example. Another time I go out with composition of organs in How to Make Your Day Exciting, because I was very bored about the public space in London that was so geometrical and so previsible that I decided to make this contagious sound composition, because orgasms are not neutral sound, they really impact you physically. And I want that people react, but I was in London, so not that much happened, you know. But yeah, it really depends on the, it really depends. But in that case, yes, I think it was more the potentiality.
The potentiality, it's why I asked also. I think this is an interesting element in the idea of the public space and the public sphere, is that I think for my work also the potentiality of the even minimal reaction an intervention in a public space can have can already be a very large thing for me. For instance, there was this very small series of intervention we did with the Phototech Foundation in the Hevert quartier 2 months ago, and it was like really small photographs of toy cars, toys. And just we put them up on walls and on windows, but really small photographs, and they were mostly gone the day after, or at least a maximum a week after. And then, in a way, this was very disappointing, because a part of you wants to have the respect of the community as a reaction to the fact that you give something to their public sphere, to the public space, because it's very dirty there. It's okay, little mini exhibitions in the public space. But then another part, and for me this is more important, is that the reaction of someone tearing it from the window, or someone taking it because he likes the photo and then stealing it, well, that's maybe even more interesting. And I think this tension, because for me this is really continuous tension inside my work. Do I want it to stay? Do I want it to be taken apart, or do I want it destroyed? Or is interesting in the way that this is where we connect to the last question, is it more interesting to know what will happen, mm-hmm. to write this the script, uh-huh. so, and to really limit the possibilities, or to just do one small act and then leave it to how it evolves? I like that. I have to admit, I like this, when you can't know how the other person reacted, because then you can also go further and try new things, and it's more for me, it's more interesting.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it always goes back to control, yes. and to us, like how much we want to be challenged, like to lose control or to let others.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the second conversation a month ago, we also spoke about this, that you have the preparatory phase, making the protocols, what are the limits that are set, and then kind of the letting it go.
Yeah.
But all these things, it's nice because they're, to me, they're all works or part of the work.
Yeah. Right?
And they're, it offers very different audiences also.
Mm.
And it's nice when you say, I make a recording, because then afterwards, again, this is a new phase for this.
The best way for me to see all that, like in my case, is like it's a continuous rehearsal. Yeah. So it's not finished, it just goes on.
Yes.
Sometimes it works and sometimes it fails.
Yeah. But also we mentioned that, but I don't know if probably we can go to another question.
Yes.
But I think that in works that are in a way performative, because that beyond if we work or not in the public space itself, but when we work with something that is more performative and it's not just, again, the picture on the wall, even if also the picture could be performative in a way, but we understand each other. I think that it's very important to collect failures. It's really, for me, it's when I was younger, as also as an artist, because now I'm 40, it's not that I'm old, but I'm not that young neither, but I was so afraid to fail, and I had also another concept about the failure, you know. Now it's not that I seek the failure, because it's not true, but for me it's very precious when I'm wrong. In a way, especially with the art, with the dynamics, not with the object. And I think we should make one day one seminar, seminar about all our failures.
What
because
did not work?
It could be helpful, and for us.
It's also interesting if you think about exhibitions, that in an exhibition you never show the failure, right?
Yeah.
So like if I have to kind of open up now, because I'm thinking of future exhibition and I share my research and what did I do, what do? You select only the things that work.
Yeah.
You make the choice to also expose and make visible what didn't work, right?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. It's good to keep those things a place. But
yeah.
Shall we pick a new one?
Yes. Me?
Yeah.
What are your criteria to work in public space? I think I kind of said, no? Or shall I expand?
You can pick a new one if you want. Huh?
Or maybe someone wants to answer that one, no?
I think you can pick a new one.
Okay,
it's your,
okay, I'm going to do that. Working, marking, and claiming space.
Ah, is that a theme? Yeah, that's
the
a theme.
So it's not a question.
No, it's not a question.
Now I have to wait. What is presence?
What is presence?
Yeah. But we're speaking presence in public space, right?
Question.
Okay. I tried to think a bit on that.
Yeah.
So if I think from what I'm trying to explore in these years, and it has to do with parisia, so speaking up. So presence, basically, there is that moment where you expose yourself, or at least what you think is yourself. It's about exposure. It's about finding a way to articulate. Maybe you do it by speaking. That's very Foucault, like the discourse. Or maybe you just do it by standing somewhere in public space, thinking of Gezi Park, one of the most great moments that we all remember and became iconic was the standing man, because in the protest they could not protest anymore, so she was just there standing. And just by being there with his body and claiming the space, that was really a presence that affected very much the whole situation, right? So presence, yeah, can take part, can take place in many ways. But it has to be somehow through your body, I think. Yeah, and this is maybe the discussion we were having the other time about if something happens virtually or not. I think this is the thing, that whatever happens online is mediated through a screen. That's the difference.
It's funny you say exposing, because immediately that comes fragility and showing something that you maybe do not want to show.
And this is the whole thing with public space and presence, because we are all so equipped to hide ourselves, right? We hide ourselves through what we say or how we behave or that, and that moment we're just stripped.
Yeah. I think that links to your project, Anna, very much.
What?
That links to your project very much.
No, I was thinking something in particular now that you were, actually for me, when I'm in video, I don't feel like, it's probably something very banal, but I feel an object. I see myself. It's not the same relation that I've got with my screen, with your faces and my face included. Because I will see my face, I don't know, I become an object.
Excuse me, what do you mean? When you are
in video.
In video.
When it's internet things, or it's my presence is not really a presence. I don't know, there is something that it's like, it really misses a dimension that is my body, my three-dimensionality, you know? And I was also thinking, and then I will, about the, because, for example, I work a lot in radio, and I worked in radio since years and years, not now during the pandemic. And for example, when I'm in radio, I speak about myself, about the radio creature, never about radio presence, because I'm very aware that actually my presence eventually is a projection of the listeners, you know, but I'm not there. And so, for me, definitely the presence is related to the moment, to the present, and to the body. It's, for me, it's clear.
Yes, and the voice is the body. The voice is part of it, not just an image.
And the silence, as you say, for example, a body decides intentionally to stand in a place, it's reclaiming a silence, but it's still bodily. So it's, for me, this is really about presence.
For me, it's a very complicated matter because for some years, in the estate of Casper and Willemeister, there is a whole series of works, actually, which were almost only occupied with presence, but the series is called Absence, because there was a series of works all investigating how you can create a personal absence while being in some way present. The main idea was, does presence always entail an identity of a specific person who is present? Or can it also, can the person just be a visual presence but not himself, or not his role, another role? But then afterwards, so this was until 2019, I think. But then if you see what happens now, the last year, there is like this element, it's for me new to think about, and this is proximity. What does proximity mean? Because presence is, like I think you say, Anna, very much connected to the mental image of an individual being somewhere in time. And we connect this with physicality, we connect this with all many things that we mentioned, but for instance we say the voice is the body, but the voice is transmitted through visio. So in some way, the voice doesn't work in the same way if it comes through a mediated device as it works in proximity. So this proximity, for me, is something very new, and also in society in general, I think it's kind of a new thing to consider, because we have apparently entered a time it seems that way, where we can have presence in a certain form without proximity, where proximity is just not a part of the presence. And I work a lot with in longer it's still in trajectories with children, and there immediately it was clear that the presence without proximity did not work. It did not work. You could create the most virtual interesting context, but we see now virtual teaching for young children, it just doesn't work the way it should. And this leads me to fantasize that our senses, of course, we count 6 or 5, maybe they are limited, maybe there are more, maybe there is another sense, a sense of proximity, which is a total of all these senses, and maybe something more like an oral thing where we sense the proximity of others, and where we interact through pheromones, through all these things that we don't consciously process, but which are very important for our existence as a human being and our connection with the world in general. But this is not talked about, because as presence can, or apparently we thought could exist in a way without this proximity through Zoom meetings, etc. So I'm wondering if this is not a concept that we really should introduce into this debate, not this specific debate, but the debate in general.
That we have to add it to the word presence in order to be more clear.
Nearness is also a way, but proximity I think is better. But nearness is, and then we come to something that the others would like to react to, a word that's already been mentioned before in the preparation is intimacy. When we call proximity nearness, then it has a more direct relation to intimacy, of course. And then you think about someone who is near to you, someone you're intimate with. Proximity is more really the physical thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's about proximity, but it has to do first with the fact that now the senses are falling apart when they are transmitted, and that the fact that they are transmitted through a device. This is what definitely creates a new, but it's definitely something to consider. I agree. Because in a way we start perceiving differently through that, and then what does it mean to communicate in that new way?
Yeah, I think every device or every the microphone in there, the computer, the camera, they're all filters. They're not. They disturb.
Yes,
our presence, maybe also even.
Yeah.
It's also not neutral. That's the thing. Of course, we can pretend. We can pretend a lot, and we can pretend that they're not there, but very much they are there, and they impose more than a filter, they impose even a different reality on us. I think the sense, I don't know if it's something that you know, but I can really say that since smartphones became a standard fixture of our lives, I often have the feeling of having a sense like this, a new sense where I feel this connectivity, where this is a sense I really have that, and I mostly feel it when I don't have it, when I don't have my smartphone, or my battery is gone, or my smartphone is off, and then I sense like a loss. So that's, for me, this sense of a loss is a proof that there is at the other moments a presence of another sense that is new, and that we really don't maybe know how to use or deal with. We pretend that it's just neutral.
I don't know, it's kind of, I'm jumping now from what you say and then what you say, and I mix everything, but just thinking of back to the, I don't know, radio, right? Thinking about the medium, basically, like how do we deal with mediums coming in, but I'm not a connoisseur on that. Like once upon a time, radio, that was an invention, right? And the voice could be transmitted. Maybe it really helped in quite revolutionary, right? This voice being transmitted. But I don't know, something is happening now that like maybe we feel overwhelmed by all this kind of medium possibility, and it's like as if we are left, I don't know, behind. Or
I don't know. Concerning radio, it has been the medium of dictatorships as well. So It's always up the intention that are behind the medium, I think, that makes it revolutionary or not, because radio, it's also a revolutionary, it has been also a revolutionary tool. We can have a lot of examples in mind. I don't know, I don't have a clear idea about what we are speaking about in this moment. But what you have just said, I think that is probably what I feel, that I feel overwhelmed. I feel that I cannot stand it, actually I cannot stand it anymore, the Zoom meeting, the WhatsApp meeting. I feel that I'm not speaking with people anymore. So this is a feeling. I'm still not ready to have an idea about it, but I feel very overwhelmed. So probably it has something to do with what Casper was saying about the physicality, the proximity. I mean, it's enough to see people that are framed. You miss a lot of the communication.
Yeah, but that's what your work is also about. It's about the gestures, about the hesitations, about they all drop.
It's so mediated that at one point, to be very honest with you, probably it's not that interesting for people listening, and probably neither for you, but the other day I got another video conference that was very interesting with very amazing artist people. I was very glad. But at the end, I cried because I didn't know what happened. I didn't know if I was useful in a way. I didn't know, because you miss all the reactions. You don't have reactions. That's the point when you are on internet.
I don't know. I also have the feeling
it's
I talk
so
to myself. It's really
it's very alienating. Too much. So I hope that. This will be a kind of memory of our life very soon, and that's enough.
I have to think, because I look at the papers here on the table all the time, and there is this the title of the theme, Public Time. Public Time. And when we were talking about this now, this revolution maybe or not of evolution or technology, the mediation of our existence through devices, I have to think when I see these words, Public Time, about the invention of literally the public time, the moment when trains started running, when all of a sudden villages had public time, which means literally there was a clock in the village that told you what the time it was. And before trains made this necessary, there was no public time. There was when you had to go to church, and then between that and when the sun went down, or when next time you had to go to church, there was personal time. There was time, lived time, experienced time, but not public time. It was not something shared with the other people around necessarily. You could, and I think these kind of evolutions or changes are in a way maybe too much for us to really process while they are happening. We live through our bodies, so we live these changes. As probably the people in the 19th century and then in the 20th century in other parts of the world lived all of a sudden the introduction of a public clock that says this is the time, and now with phones it's more that, because you have the time all the time.
I want to interfere here because what I liked about the public time, not when it's not mine, it's Cornelius Castoriadis, and what he means, because he speaks about ancient Greece as this kind of project of autonomy, because for the first time people are coming together and they have to make choices together, like what's my limit, how do we function as society, etc. So he says that actually public space cannot exist without public time. They really need each other. But what is public time? Is that moment, that dimension, he says, where the collectivity can inspect its own past, so its own deeds. And then for them it was historiography, so there was something writing down what people decided, the citizens decided together. So I guess the whole problem comes back to, I don't know if we really feel if we're citizens or if we're a community, and what really binds us together, and where is the responsibility. And that's, if it becomes only public time in the sense of a machine, you know, just clicking there, we don't feel any other responsibility than just obeying the time. We don't inspect together.
And did it include also that things that were decided were put up, and that people could
Yes.
I reread actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you can always go back and say, what did we do actually? Then maybe it's not so good. Maybe let's rethink about it.
I don't know, because in your interpretations of public times, as Casper and Eleni, you are saying, I see that in the case of Casper, there is a kind of imposition, no, of mm-hmm. the public time. Mm-hmm. There is, yes, for example, at this time you have to make your prayer, at this time you have to wake up, at this time you have to start working, etc., etc. And radio, actually, had a very impact in our Western society about that, because it really decides who has to be at home at one time, who has to go out, etc., etc. But in your case, there is this kind of intimidation, no, in time. And in your time, there is in the case that Eleni was mentioning about the public time, was more a kind of common.
Yes.
And democratic in a way, possibility of democratization of time, no, together. And this reflection makes me think about again the public space, because in public space as well there is this intimidation of the public, and actually we sometimes feel victims of the public space, because we know that we have to behave in a certain way, we have to be there at this time and not another time. There are boundaries, physical boundaries, about the private slash public spaces, etc., etc. And I think that we as artists, I speak about it, but probably I could not. We try to intervene to make it common, to make it democratic. Probably it's a big word, but so this is another tension that I see. Yeah, it's helpful for our.
It makes me think also again of what you said before, that the presence, in the actual presence, proximity, that we want to, that we often want to hide, and that in your project, the Queer Coast, that you're showing this.
Mm.
You're, the women who testify in the project say, I want to hide here, but making that visible is then actually...
Yeah.
It's good to claim public time, maybe, for actual collective reconsidering.
And they're both needed, I think. That's the point.
Yeah, it's like to me, you cannot arrive to public space without that.
Yeah.
Somehow.
No. Yeah. Probably in radio you could try to push toward public time.
Huh.
That's for sure, because radio. It depends really on the use that you propose, but it could be really like an agora without presences. But then you really can build. I really believe in it. I really am like a fan of the possibilities of this medium in this sense. And in that, you can really speak about public time if you make it interactive, of course. Because if it's just your voice speaking to the others, it could be problematic. But if you open the telephone, for example, it could be. And it has been like this for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think, for example, I don't know if you know Radio Alice from the 70s in Bologna.
No.
It was a very revolutionary radio, but from a lot of points of view, from aesthetic point of view, political point of view. And they were really connected to il Movimento Operaio, the worker movement in the city, and with the students, and actually they organized demonstrations live, like really with the, and there was no internet, there was just the phone and the radio, and it was so.
And there were really many members running it.
Yeah. They were part of the they were activists, all of them. And they make like live about what was going on during the demonstration, really by people passing by the radio. So it was really kind of,
it was a live testimony
of
what was happening.
Yeah.
It's interesting to consider this ancient Greek situation, I think, maybe. Because it could maybe function as kind of a metaphor for some other things we already spoke about. Because of course, this public time where people could see what came before them, see their past, react on it, was only open to a very, very limited part of the population who could, let's say, read. Let's imagine that they could read, which will be a very small part. But that's not, of course, it's not what I intend to talk about. But if we take this metaphor and put it back upon some other things we said earlier mm-hmm. about how to get out of about the confrontation. If you consider our work and if you consider what we do or our propositions, and then you imagine that there are also like the people who can't read. Of course, they can read now in here in Belgium, Brussels nowadays. Most of the people can read, so it's no longer a question of literacy, but it's more a question of reading the text, reading the what you want to say, or reading a message, getting information to someone else who is not like you, right? Yeah. Engaging in this confrontation, and trying what the Greeks probably did not intend to do, trying to breach the boundary of who can read and who cannot read. Exactly. What you want to propose? What you want to propose? And in this way, I think the word of responsibility, which you used earlier, Anna, is very important for what we do, or what we try to do, what we propose to do. Because, for instance, just our city now here, and the complexity of the society nowadays, mm-hmm. With communication tools bringing information from all around the world, there's no longer one imposed history. That's, and then there is this question of literacy. How do you make what you are making legible to others? I think this is a very important matter.
Yeah, I think what you touch now, it's important what you touch, because actually, indeed, if we think in the past, it's very simple. You have this project of autonomy in the ancient Greeks. Who are they? 3,000 citizens, right? That's it. Mm-hmm. We have the slaves, the women, doesn't count. The others are working there, and they can be in this autonomy game. And there they can play. But then, at the moment, he says also something interesting, Castoriadis, about public space. Because for him, Parisia, to speak up, is not... I mean, this is really the misconception, when you just say, well, I have the right to speak. So we have democracy, everyone can speak. Yeah, great. That's really exactly, they say, the example where Parisia goes wrong. Mm-hmm. Because Parisia is supposed to be this moment when I speak to you and I'm trying to transform your ethos. Mm. And so we are we engage in a discussion, right? And you listen to me. So if this is all out and it's just a society of people, oh yeah, I can speak and I can also speak and everyone is shouting, you don't have it. So Castoriadis says, Parisia can only work together with responsibility of the citizen and shame, that you feel shame for your city, you know, you really...
Yeah.
Okay, so one problem is this, that probably we all think we are in a... We can claim public space, we can do everything, but in a way we're not really responsible. Mm-hmm. And second problem is that we as artists, we also feel like, how do we reach to others that don't have the same, privileges like us, but do we become educators? I mean, how many functions do we try to bridge?
And also, I mean, when you are speaking about this, because when you work with the participatory dynamics and with public space, there is also this confusion, no? Mm-hmm. But actually, more and more, I don't want to be an educator. Yeah. I mean, it's really clear for me. At least this is my intention. I don't want to educate no one. At the contrary, I want to... It's really about listening. I mean, when, for example, I'm feminist, I'm meeting 20 women by years for the project that I do, for example. I don't want to work just with feminists. I want to work also with someone who probably is more feminist than me, but doesn't use this word, or probably not at all, you know. And this is this confrontation that, in a way, also puts me in question. So, of course, there is a verticality, because it's my proposition coming from me, and I will edit these voices. So I'm very conscious also about the powers, and anyway, the symbolic powers that I have. But I don't want to educate no one. For me, at least, it's not my intention, because otherwise it becomes very paternalistic, you know.
But do you feel like you combine? That's my personal interest. Yeah. Now, sorry for jumping in, because I'm trying to understand if contemporary artists that want to deal with more, I don't know, political issues or more in the public space, etc., if we are hybrids or not. So I just wanted to ask you, do you feel the word artist covers everything? Do you feel like caretaker at the same time when you receive the voices of the others? How would you define it?
Yeah.
Sorry for jumping in.
No. I don't know. I don't know if I can really reply to your question, but I think that, for example, I use the word artist because probably it's the easiest one. And so probably it's not perfect, but it's the one that... and so for me, it's clear that as an artist, there is always a political dimension in my work, but in my work, I don't mean that every artist has to be political, but in my work, there is something in the process, really, in the process of encounter and disencounter and listening. For me, there is always something political there. And as long as I work with people, I feel a double responsibility, because of course there is a kind of accord de confiance,
agreement in
In trust, common trust, because they trust me and I they know that their voices, their presences will be in a way edited.
But you call the project is your project.
Yeah.
But it's really made.
But
there
is
their contribution.
There is a tension, because there is a kind of co-authority, that's for sure. That's because often it's not always the case, but often the content comes from the participation of people.
Yeah.
And in that case, for me, there is a kind of authoriality. Then how I handle with that, so for example, of course, I can make examples because probably it's the best way to understand. For example, in Queer Codes, I interviewed several people, several women, and we had this accord that once the interview is finished, when I will work on it, I will make them listening to that, so that they will be okay. I will credit them each time, and this is a little accord that we have, for example, because I want that they feel comfortable with my intervention. But as an artist, I intervene and I sign my work with my name, that's for sure. But of course they accompany all the project, and for me, in this specific case, it's also, I wish, the beginning of a platform that so at one point won't have my name. I mean, if there is a coalition between two of them, or another project that will come that it's not my proposition, I'm very fine with that, because the idea is also to create a little community about some themes that are putting us together with the pretext of the work. So there is a kind of, this is probably the... But what I want to say, that for me it's very, very important, this is probably one of the things that I'm really sure about, is that as an artist, I don't give the voice. I hate this definition. I found it so dangerous. And actually it's weird, because when I started to make radio, when I was 20 years old, so 20 a lot of years ago, I was in a community radio dealing with activism and feminism in radio, and we used this definition to give the voice to the women. And I need sometimes to really realize that it was dangerous. It was so dangerous, so paternalistic and so vertical. And today I prefer to use the idea to share the microphone. Share the microphone.
You did it with every good intention, but yes, on the second thing,
And this is dangerous for the artist, you know, because the artist sometimes thinks that gives the voice. You know what I mean? And it's not true, because everyone has his voice. That you formalize it in a way, so you have a responsibility, of course, but you are not giving the voice to no one.
No, maybe you just provide possibilities.
You open
context.
You don't
give the voice.
Yeah,
of course. I was thinking in the beginning, like how I started becoming really interested, that's a long time ago, but I was in Italy doing a residency, and I was feeling like, okay, I don't know this place, I'm in a residency, so what's the way to work? And I thought, what if I become an amplifier, or a kind of, you know, that the others actually, through me, can speak. So, like bringing the other voices in the project, but they knew more than I knew. Yeah. But yeah, in that sense, more mediator, right?
Yeah.
But still, I agree, and that's kind of important, that at the end of the day, that after all these years of my research, I'm thinking, yeah, at the end I'm an artist.
Yeah.
I could be taking some other roles, but for example, if I end up spending most of the time just mediating,
yeah,
or like taking practical things, then I'm not doing my job anymore.
Mm.
It's quite dangerous there.
I think it's important also to... I mean, an artist has different languages also, and it's not only the one of the education or the...
No.
And this is important to maybe formulate somehow,
mm,
what is the actual intervention in?
Mm.
What is that work? What is that? And that's maybe not with words,
mm,
language, but it's capturing things that you capture.
Mm.
Mm. And
then there is also a tension again about what you were saying about educators, because of course, if I have to define myself, define my work, so put the intentions of my work on the table, I would say definitely I'm not an educator. I would not look like as an educator, but at the end of the day, there is the paresia there, as you were saying,
right?
I mean, I'm feminist, I'm very aware about, I'm aware from where I speak from, you know? So of course, if I hear something that it's very far away from that, coming from what a man, a woman, a child, I will try to anyway to put questions there, you know. And actually, I think that at the end of the day, what I'm doing is really to propose questions. That is my verticality. There is a form of verticality because I arrive there with questions always.
Mm-hmm.
Always when I work with people, I always arrive with questions, but the questions, it's open in a way. But there is a tension.
It's interesting, and also connecting to another thing that we said before, is the concept of failure.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think what you describe now is for me a typical example of feeling of a failed work when you are doing this participatory project and you've been investing your time and ideas and etc., and then you get a reaction and it's totally the opposite of what you've been talking about a long time, and then you will try to put forward questions, for instance, to, as a last resort, try to do something. But then, for me, this is what makes me think about a moment 2 years ago, which I experienced with a very small child. I was working with a group of very small children, like 4 years old,
oh,
I think. And it made me think a lot about failure, that moment, because at that time, I hadn't really separated the position of the educator and the artist working with a group of children. It was just me getting to know this process of working with children. And there was a boy, and he really didn't want to do what the rest of us were doing. I wouldn't even say what I was doing, what everyone else was doing. And he really didn't want to do, and he started to tear apart or to destroy what the others were doing. So I tried to stop him once, and tried to stop him twice, tried to stop him three times, and he still continued, and he became very angry. And then I became angry. And then this was a four-year-old boy. And then we had a fight, really had a physical fight, because I wanted to protect the work that another child was making, and he wanted to destroy it. And then at that moment, there was really like an epiphany for me, that I realized if I take this farther, then we will really start fighting. I will have to constrain him like this, and then maybe he will be stronger. What is this just happening? And this is the moment for me when I realized, and actually it's about time, and maybe about public time again, that the importance for me was not to educate this group of people, not even that boy, about something that I wanted to tell, but to share time, which is for me really synonymous to life in many ways, with this group of people, in my personal way, because this was the situation. We were in a classroom, so there is the dynamic of verticality which you cannot erase. You could try to, but you're still the adult in a room of children.
Mm-hmm.
And the potentiality of this shared time was for me, from that moment on, enough. there was no more, failure was no longer an option, because there was no longer success that was an option. I could not succeed in educating the kids, I just could go there, try just to be there with them, have a moment of quality, then we come up, touch upon this subject of what quality is then in a way. And this has been very liberating, because there I found the freedom to distinguish the position of the educator, which is an important position in society, very important.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to learn someone to count 1 + 1 = 2, that, well, if he's, he or she says it's 5, you have a problem in life. Huh? So, but
or not.
Or you have a problem in society, because society is very strong on mathematics. But yeah, maybe not. So this for me was really an epiphany. Mm. That and then failure is an important word, because if you have the sense that what you're doing has the potential of failing, then you have to question yourself, am I really sharing my time, or am I really imposing something on the other people that I'm working with?
Yeah, this is a tension anyway, always. Even if you put your best intentions, it's always like,
Shall I draw a question?
Yeah,
sure. Do you feel like you have a mandate to work in public space? Not an easy question.
Mandate, exactly what it is. Yeah. Because I read it yesterday as well. I think I know what it means, but I'm not sure.
Like, it's really a juristic term, actually. Like, we give you
mandat,
the mandat.
Legitimité.
No. It's like as if you feel you have the, you are authorized from someone to.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe,
Let's say from higher forces or.
Or an education system authorized.
Yeah.
Or.
This is something in your work, Eleni. Like, giving the mandate to speak up, like that.
I don't give any mandate.
No, no. That people can have that this mandate can be shared. That you're not imposing people. That is this something that's alive with you when you are doing your work, that you want to share this feeling of having the mandate in public space, that others can also feel empowered to take the mandate themselves, or.
I don't know. I cannot think of it in terms of mandate.
Okay.
But I can think of it in relation to myself. So maybe I would say I don't feel I have the mandate to work in public space, but somehow I have the mandate to deal with some public questions in relation to that. Like, what about? I mean, how do we? I don't know. To put it simply, what I like about Parisia is basically that it's always this negotiation about me and the others.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's what I like. So it's basically, how can I be my best? How can I care for myself? How can I do it with others? And sometimes confrontation is also part of it. If we're always soft and nice, we never progress, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like how to create possibilities for that.
Mm-hmm.
Both things. That's why I need both, you know?
Mm.
Yeah, so in that sense, I have a mandate,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Voila. How about you?
I think also the question is here in the list of questions because of the fact that private companies or governments seem to own a general mandate to impose their message upon the public and public space, whereas the individual has to take the liberty or the freedom to express themselves. And for me, in my work, it's often about realizing this matter and then taking the mandate, not having it, not necessarily having it, but taking it as a way maybe to question the silent mandate that large companies, corporations, or governments have taken upon themselves, which is not really something that's been discussed openly. A very known example is in public space in Brussels, the advertising boards that are digital, where you really have screens in public space that can show any message at any time. And we really don't, I don't think we really were ever asked if we gave our government a mandate to impose these kind of screens upon us, but apparently we did, because they do, and we are not attacking this. A lot of society is accepting it, let's say. So the small, really small interventions that I then sometimes did or do are about raising this confrontation a bit, that people might question the fact that you have a mandate or not to do something. Yeah. When, for instance, with the Tijdelijk Informatie Centrum, the temporary information center, we created a temporary information board in the public square in Meerout over the summer. We specifically didn't ask for permission to do it, because if you cannot create a mandate for yourself by asking permission to your government to do it. So you really have to find a limit, maybe cross it, and then create this. For me, this is creating this vagueness, and there can be a democracy in this part where it's not delineated if it's permitted or not permitted.
I never really made this question to me, and so thanks, because now I really see it in a way. And I a little bit agree with what Kasper was saying, in the sense that for me, for example, I've been realizing that one of the reasons why I work in public space is also to measure, in a way, my freedom, my potential freedom. You know, it's easy to see how far can I go. No, for example, when I put my tail in the, then I discovered that actually there is a law that you cannot be dressed.
Do you know what this is about? This project?
Which one?
What you
the project of this was a project that I made in Brussels that was called Mi Porti al Mare, Do You Bring Me to the Sea?
I have seen photos, but I don't know what exactly.
I actually, very simply as that, I put a marmot tail so that I could not move alone, because it was really silicone one. It was seems I made some abdominals those days, and I asked people to bring me to the sea in Brussels, and so this was the idea. And in that case, I didn't ask for it. I never asked. The only time I asked for permission was for queer codes, but because the project that I'm presenting here now in Brussels with Nadine at La Centrale for Contemporary Art, and in that case, I had to ask it because it was in with La Centrale, you know? Mm. But if I did it just with, as an artist alone, I would never ask it. Because for me, it's really about, I know that it's a very common word, but it's about the appropriation of the public space to see where I can arrive. So for example, when we spoke the other day, I mentioned this example that for me, it was one of the moments in which I fall in love with Brussels, I think, because for me, with Brussels, for me, it was not a first love or relationship, no. It asked me sometimes, but I remember that I was coming from London, that really, if you put literally a radio on the floor, after 5 minutes, someone will come to ask why, if you have authorization. In London, it's really, in the city center at least, it's very controlled, but over controlled. And I arrived here, and I decided to put a tail, a marmot tail again, on the statue of Hans Pack in Place Sainte-Catherine. It was 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It was September, there was sun, a lot of people passing by, and at one point a police car was coming close by me, and in that moment there was water in the fountain, so I have a scale, I have I was really coming inside the monument and put something on a statue, and they didn't do anything. And so I fall in love with Brussels because I understand in a way that as an artist I can touch the city. Probably I was just lucky. It's possible. I don't want to generalize, but in my experience and in my feeling, I say, okay, this is a city where I can
manipulate things.
Yeah, I can touch things. I don't have to be afraid of. So yeah.
Maybe this is the city giving you all a mandate.
Yeah,
I really think maybe something that there is in common is this kind of negotiation between taking and having the mandate, basically.
Yeah.
What public space does with that.
Yeah. And also, when Kasper was speaking about your intentions within the public space with your work, I was thinking to a quotation again, Michel Foucault forever. that it really, when I read it, you know, these sentences that really accompany your life. There are a few in my life, and this is definitely one of them. He says that transgression makes makes visible the limits of the limit. And actually, I use it a lot in the listening experience. That for me, transgression makes also audible the limit of the audible. But this is really about personal research, that dealing with voices, etc. But in your case, in our works, I think that there is this attempt really to make it clear that our limits are fictions. You know, that actually we can move it.
But this is. Seen that way, what we just said about Brussels, it's also a caveat, it's also a thing to watch out for, because if Brussels is really then the kind of place that gives this mandate so easily, how to find these limits of our limits? If we can, and because they are there, and they are there, and maybe the system has just created a larger envelope, so you can find, you make it harder to find those limits, but once you start filling in administrative forms to get money, for instance, then you realize, oh, there are limits to what people... and for instance, this takes us really back to public space, is not everything that we think of as public space is public space. Sometimes it is private or privatized. It's not advertised as private, but then you start to try to do something there, and all of a sudden you realize security guards come up, and you realize, oh, I thought I was in public space. And you're not. So I think a city like London makes it very visible that the level of control that's exercised upon the city, upon the people, is very high. Here we have the sense that the level of control is not so high. But maybe, and that's why I think we should, we might have to question and push ourselves continuously. There is this large level of control, it's just hidden. In a way, better. It's,
That was always my impression of Brussels.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you get to know this city? It took me months and years because the best things were always hidden.
Yeah.
So I think maybe it does operate in that.
Yeah.
And also imagine being. Imagine all the people living in Brussels, and imagine all of them trying to do what we are doing. Then you know that a large part of them would not get away. It's all that we are trying. A large part of the people living in Brussels would not get away with putting up posters here and there, or putting up Mermaid's Tale. It's also because of that we are who we are, that we can get away with a lot of what we do. And this is where it becomes visible that the way society has organized itself in Brussels really has these limits, which are really confrontational if you think about them. There's just the mobility that we have to come here, go places, visit all kinds of worlds in Brussels. And then to turn this around and realize that what for us is public space is very large. It's not necessarily the case for a lot of other people in Brussels to have this list of options of places to go to. It's maybe a very much smaller city with limits that are very more touching upon their physical being or upon their identity. So this for me is always like this watch out sign in my head that if it's too easy, something's wrong. Hey, Lucy, can
new question?
Shall I? No, you.
Lucy never did it.
No, yes.
go.
What media do you use in public space? Anna.
Okay. Actually, my body, often, but not always. My voice. Radios, actual radios. I did sometimes, for example, in London. It was really during my master in London, so 2012 already. I did a series which was called Arm Wrestling between two radios with different topics. For example, an Indian voice, an English speaker but with Indian voice and a very British just asking, are you listening to me in that, with that accent, for example, or for example, one radio speaking a man voice with some words that eventually in feminine becomes vulgar, because becomes offensive. And this was this unrest. It was very simple, dispositive, that I just want to put in the public space to see what happens. But I, yes, it was like some years ago. And by making these radios on the floor, I discovered, for example, that in the city of London, sorry, the very didn't have the right to put a radio on the floor. So yeah, this was very crazy, but what we were seeing. But so this, then, for example, in this actual moment, I'm working with the QR codes in public space, mostly yes, but with this positive related to the activation of listening, mm-hmm. I would say. But now I'm sick of the digitalization. So from I state it now. I think that from September on, I will work with people, just people. Me,
I was just
with people.
Thinking, is the conversation also a medium? Can we?
Yeah.
Rather.
So, yeah, I would do. No, really. My further projects are made with people, because I'm sick of this.
Mm-hmm. I think the conversation is a medium. I'm more and more. I think this is.
It's not the form.
Because of a lot of things that we discussed earlier, because of all the things that cannot be transcribed, because of a conversation is just a form, and it's something that can be transcribed into text.
Uh-huh.
But the conversation for me is always a lot more interaction, silences, physicality, movements you make while trying to talk, and also a thing in time. Which for me makes it a medium. It's a thing that happens at a certain moment in time. It's not repeatable. You can repeat the recording, but that the recording is the medium. It's no longer conversation. That I discovered this recently during a project in Brazil in Vorst, where a whole installation led to a series of conversations, and I realized the conversation here is not the form this project is taking, but this is really the medium. This is actually where the work is happening. All the other things will be the preparation and the documentation.
Mm.
But this is the medium of the.
Because I was using body and voice,
mm-hmm.
to speak about that,
mm-hmm, yeah.
and interaction.
Yeah.
So yeah, we have different ways of defining it.
Yeah.
But yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
About me.
What media do you use in public space?
But I thought, I answered this before. So
yeah.
I said I was.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, it's about actual presence. So it, but. That's the tricky part. I'm not a performer, or I'm not a good performer, so I participate because I don't want to be out, but actually other people are better than me. So let's say constructed stage sets, but this is what I have been doing in public space. That's not my only medium. Now we're speaking only public space. Eh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where there is some kind of plot, let's say, or a specific scene to be shot, so some people are really informed about it and they take place, and then there are other persons coming in that could be volunteers or could be accidental or and then something happens or doesn't. So maybe the best thing I remember is actually when things got very tense and there was this massive disagreement between the professionals and the amateurs, because the amateurs really liked it and the professionals were pissed off. Because it was like, we cannot do our job. And I thought that was the most Parisiastic moment, you know? Where, yes. But actually, that's the whole problem. You cannot record everything. Not everything is really there. So it's like, yeah, somehow you... I don't know, it's difficult to say. I think partly the script that I made with all the scenes is also something that I find also a medium. Because
it can
be always reactivated, so you know it. Because
the protocol is the medium as well,
mm-hmm.
maybe. The protocol that you said.
Yes. So in a way, actually, it's like really between observation and activating imagination. So it's difficult to say. Then I have some things, I call them maybe it's like leftovers from that process that I think they're worth taking care of. That's how I'm trying to deal with it. Yeah.
And what are those leftovers, for example?
So, for example, you have like a little video extract that shows how people responded, and it's like 3 minutes of that, or it's like a costume that someone wore, or it's like a note, or it's like the letter from Sarah being very angry, why did I have to participate like that, and etc.
I have to answer the question. I was avoiding it a bit. No, I think for a long time my medium in public space was photography, and this has of course its roots in the fact that at first I really used photography, let's say in a classic sense of recording images in public space, but then at different moments I really became very aware of a lot of things, among others, the performative aspect of photography in a public space, the act of publicly taking a picture of something. This is really, like, for me, it became a very public thing to do, because, and it, I think it also became because you had reactions. People reacted to the fact that you were photographing something. So I started thinking more about this movement of specific, like how you move when you're taking a picture and how people, so. Also looking at other photographers who became very sneaky or become very sneaky in making photographs without people noticing, so it's a hidden act. Mm. Yeah? So this was something, so the medium photography became more, it's like a thing on itself, where it became less about the images but more about the presence or absence. It was that same project of making images of people or of the surroundings in public space. And I have to think about this one project I did that was a long time ago already, where instead of this usual setup where you have as a medium a camera, a photographer, and a subject or object to photograph, I created a very large camera system inside a caravan, and it was in public space in a park. It created kind of a private sphere where people met each other inside this caravan, and they didn't know actually it was a camera until they went inside. They went inside blindfolded. They had scripts to follow. They didn't know any of this. They were just let inside. It's just, do you want to discover? And then there the medium of photography became a little bit the opposite of what it should normally do. It there was a long moment of privateness which became really a secret. And no, the people almost never talked about what happened inside. Sometimes people were inside for 40 minutes and they had questions, acts to do, but who knows if they did it. The only thing the camera did, because they operated the cameras themselves, was document a moment when they were there. And so afterwards, people started projecting messages on these images, because the images were published a year later in the same space as the caravan, and with the questions. So people started projecting the messages on the images, but they were actually totally in the private sphere. So tried to invert the idea of the camera capturing a special moment and this magic idea of what photography should be able to do of seeing something that we can't see. It's all these kind of mythical aspects that are told about photography. So yes, I think medium. But then it evolved until a moment where there was no camera, where there was just me in the public space, and I left the camera behind. And it was still, I think, a way evolving from photography, but there was no image, no camera, but still, yeah, it's linked to this medium of photography.
It offered a situation.
Yes.
But it's crazy what you are saying, because, for example, for me, all the things that I've been doing in these last 20 years are related to my radiophonic formation. So even if there is my body and there is eventually the presences of people, for me, I'm very aware about the radiophonic background, in the language, in the type of communication that I enact, and all these kind of things. So I can definitely believe what you're saying.
Yeah. I it's funny that all your media indeed lead back to.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the mandate that was given to you by your education then. It's somehow.
I don't know if I have something, so I mean, I think the one thing that is guiding me through all these years is this conflict between the image and the word. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And where does this conflict come from?
Yeah, maybe sometimes I think a friend of mine is saying that we are formed by our complexes. This is what makes us move. So it's like I have this very strong, the visual aspect. It's like I see, I can make my nice drawings and paint, and I'm very happy to be on my own. But then sometimes you really feel like, yeah, but I want to communicate also. And the words, you know, have this power, and it's like you want to master that as well. But sometimes it's also so different systems, like how you communicate with the one and how with the other. Yeah.
Hmm. New question?
Another question. Casper, you are the only man.
We have already answered this one, I think. What is public time?
Yeah,
I think this one is done. Try to get one from the bottom of the pile of questions here. Also, something we already covered about proximity. Is it an essential part of presence? I think we... Okay, this is something about the recent past. Public versus private versus intimate. What changed? And how do you deal with these changes? So I think this question refers maybe to the recent past.
The question is if we want to address it.
Yeah, that's the question, of course. So do we want to address this?
Yeah. I can go to the conclusion.
The conclusion has become the introduction since Monday.
that it's very banal, and it's what I just said before. That repeat the words are intimacy.
Public, private, intimate.
Yeah.
Intimacy, public.
That, yeah, I mean, I found that the public now, it's always a kind of let's do like if it's public, no?
As if
it. Yeah, it's always like let's make our efforts to create a public moment. And we are actually doing it, I'm not saying that, but it's always an effort.
We're exhausted.
It's always an effort, and it's exhausting. I totally agree with you. And on the other side, the forms of publicness and in which I'm exposed now, that are the Zoom meeting, the Google meet, etc.
You consider that publicness question?
Public sphere, if we refer to the public as a concept of make things public and common, probably yes, expose me also to my intimate dimension, because I don't have a studio nowadays, so I work at home, and it makes things very complicated. Because you can see, I live in a little group, in a little apartment, so you see my partner coming by, you see my background, that is my apartment. I mean, so there is this also exposure that I don't feel comfortable with. At the beginning, I found it funny, because I can see the room of my PhD tutor, for example. There was a kind of domestic share, I don't know, something that at the very beginning I found it, why not? But now I think that there is something wrong in that also, because you feel exposed.
Yes, but not in a way that it's really a conscious, it's just...
No, exactly.
It's involuntary, I mean, you would not choose.
Yeah.
Otherwise you would invite somebody at your home and come to the bedroom.
Exactly.
I mean, you don't do that, actually.
Exactly.
Yeah, because I'm actually thinking maybe it's not actually public, it's kind of semi-public or something.
Yeah.
This situation of sharing via computers and stuff.
Anyway, the conclusion is that I'm sick of it. I'm completely sick of it, and I think it's a completely common feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I hope it will be passed soon, because it's,
I feel traumatized.
You feel?
Traumatized. by all that. I don't know when I will be back and have recovered this. And that's another difficult thing, I think, because like as an artist, you want to have the energy and really just offer to others, and at that moment it's also you have to care for you.
Yeah.
Because this is, I don't know what, it becomes banal indeed what you say. But we're all sharing it, okay, that's interesting, but it's good if it stops.
No, also this pressure, because for example at the beginning I feel a little bit this pressure to find the good in the bad, you know, I was like, yes, but this is, now I'm sick of it, now I'm just sick of it and I cannot stand it anymore and I know that I wear my mask, I know that, and I hope that people around me will do it, but I really hope that, but probably we are not speaking about our topic in reality now, so. But how to come back to the public space could be the question. Because I think that it will be a process. It won't be immediately that with the vaccination and with the opening of the bars, we come back to the public space. This is,
I think... You know, already the amount of control that increased in public space the last year is incredible. We will have to deal with it because it's going to stay.
You mean after COVID? Or with the explosion of COVID?
Exactly.
And I think that will be a process also to come back to the proximity, because now there is an instinct, at least in myself, I don't want to generalize, but I, you know, for me, for example, shaking an hand, it's not that immediate as it was before, you know?
Mm-hmm. I know, we will have to relearn this.
So proximity is also about the contact of bodies, so how we will come back to that. Also as artists, how we will deal with the limits of the crisis, you know, it's a very big question for me.
Yeah, the whole gesticulation about it, giving a hand to somebody you don't know also means I trust you, I touch you.
Well, it sounds like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
That's how it feels.
Mm-hmm. Even somebody coming in and kissing and even somebody you don't know,
that
was normal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is something...
Yeah, so this, in a way, maybe it's also generating a crisis of some. I have the feeling that, of course, a lot of people say this, but that the crisis, the health crisis last year, let's say, has brought some things into focus, which of course were already there before, but which are now more clearly visible. For instance, the tendency of distance. I think, or I ask myself, isn't this something that was already progressing? We were used to seeing images from Asia where people in cities were wearing masks all the time. At the same time, in the same places where people wore masks, we had lots of stories about men groping women on the subway, so there was this problem with proximity, keeping your distance. And you can really make, this is one example, and this for me leads a bit back to the question of how to organize a social contract, how to define in a more generalized sense what can be private, what can be public, and what can be intimate, and how to construct this kind of discourse in a world that's really been not shaken up this last year, right? This has not been in 1 year that the world has been shaken up. There were things changing very rapidly at a very high pace already. And now it's really in focus because we are feeling it in our body. It's really embodied now. These changes are so much embodied. But for me, the larger question which looms then is if we consider the makeup of present-day society and the differences in, or the absence maybe of a generalized concept of what can be public or private. We are very much used now to think of our individual being as opposed to the social being, as opposed to being I and we, I and you, this subject-object division, which also then leads to these ideas of what is public, which is the I that wants to share with the you, which is private, is the I, and then the intimate is really what's more even But even those prerogatives are maybe already a step that we have taken, that we have to take a step back again. Maybe there is another layer which we have to connect to, this connectivity, a deeper layer of connectivity to experience. Because we, for instance, private sphere, well, we sold that, didn't we? The private sphere, it's been sold to private companies. It seems that hard to get this back. Yeah, we're now putting something on the digital airwaves. Well, the digital airwaves are not like the forest. Eh? Someone is paying for the digital airwaves somewhere.
Open source, by the way, but
yes, but the servers are
For sure.
Somewhere there are physical things bought by someone somewhere. So
no, there was no negotiation happening whatsoever.
No,
our opinion was not asked.
Not asked. So I think about this then how. I try to frame it in a larger perspective for myself, larger questions.
Well, making the negotiation visible is a good is a big contribution, I think, to and to the public space also. I think your works somehow do that also. No questions.
No, but all this topic, the very last topics, it really makes me think about how, because as artists, in a way, I think, in a way, probably all of us try to create forms of stay together. This is basically in two words, one of the things that we have in common, probably. And now, yes, this is the really question, how we create how we formalize to stay together in this moment. You know, it's really crazy because I've got a new project in June, in September, always about queer codes in Anderlecht, and I want to propose another form of interaction with the participants, with the protagonists of the... that part of the project, and I decided to put it in September because I hope that by September we won't have, or at least it will be a little bit easier to stay together, to really stay together. And but in the meantime, I don't know, it's like I've got a blockage. So I cannot imagine really forms of stay together, be comfortable with it, and spend time together, eventually without masks. This would be already a kind of utopia, but I cannot imagine forms now. So probably it's a challenge, you know, to...
But a big one, because we cannot also keep on putting things forward,
putting things off or changing the dates. Or
forever.
I think that I found some strategies so far. That's why also queer codes exist, because it's one digital relationship with our audio, so it's safe, you have your own dispositive, it's less accessible that other projects have been made with sound in public space. I'm aware of it, but voila, we do with what we can. And for example, by September, I'm thinking to reduce the scale of the groups, you know? For example, already it's another very basic strategy, but I think, okay, if probably there is a group of five with one person, there is way to create more groups. You know, I'm already thinking in another way of gathering, but it's not enough. I mean, this is really a big question, not just about my little artistic practice. It's really about also the opening of art spaces and how we can provide forms of being together that are good for everyone, not just for the people that are vaccinated, or because this is the danger that I see coming. You know, the COVID safe places will be very inaccessible for people like me that cannot have the vaccine now. Yeah. For example, no, but me as other, a lot of people that have no papers or not fragility of I don't know, this is really a challenge, also for us, I think, also for the artists, not just for the politicians. Yeah, I don't know if you have any idea. please call me.
Let's start a helpline for strategies.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe it's, I mean, you know, I have tried a little bit to work also online with things.
Yeah.
And I said the other time that some experiences I liked, okay, of course it's not the same,
yeah,
but still sometimes it worked, or it produced a kind of spending time together and thinking of this kind of public time, like at least, let's say even the pad, I was very enthusiastic in the beginning, remember, Luz, because I could suddenly see we are all exposed to each other when we are writing and typing, so I can not only yeah, I see the mistakes, you know, so it's like, wow, this is a potential.
It has a good intimacy. Yeah.
Yes, you really see it happening. You see,
yeah,
how the thoughts are formed on the spot.
Exactly.
You know, and then you react. Nice.
Yeah.
So I can see some nice things, but indeed, okay, coming back to the whole experience and be affected, it's another story. But now I hear you also, and I'm thinking maybe we just have to accept that for a while we cannot be super active. That
yeah,
we have to maybe retreat for a moment and say, okay, let's let it go, it's like that.
Yeah.
Because it's also very, how can I say, I feel it like this a bit, like violent to myself, to all the time try to come with a fantastic solution.
Yeah.
But yeah, I will make it, and it's like, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think also the hyper flexibility that is asked demands its toll also, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, it's about each person.
Yes.
No, because for example, I was hyperactive before the COVID, but because since child, I mean, I'm an hyperactive person.
Generally.
So for me, it's already, you know, not just hyperactive into the work, actual work, but into the relationality. I need to see people, I need to speak, I need to hug, I'm always. And so it's really, and it's crazy because also with my best friends, it's really an issue now, because so far I decided to not to complain, because I don't have any right to complain. I've got a lot of privileges and I'm in health, but now it's like coming out, it's like I cannot stand it anymore and I'm looking for solutions. And so it's a frustration because there are no actual solutions, that's what you're saying. The solution is to wait and is to
keep calm.
For example, what I want to do, I mean, I am also forced because I'm just writing the doctorate now, but if I could send the document soon, what I want to do is go back just to drawing. I want to go to this very naked relation with myself, you know, just like what do I see and what do I draw? Because, yeah, maybe the moment now permits more for that, you know, than something else. And it's, I feel this force from the outside that we always have to, as artists, we have to be efficient and we have to be smart all the time and we have to, you know, come with a solution. And what if we say, well, for a moment we don't have this solution, you know? Okay, not to say I just give up, but
yeah,
it's also dangerous, this kind of all the time conforming.
Mm. No, but actually, I don't want to say that.
No,
it's but I understand your point. It's just that for me as a person before then, it's really an urgency, and I don't believe that it's just up to the politician. Actually, I've got enough proof to say that it's not just up to politician to take the decision about my own life. You know, it's clearly I feel very frustrated because I feel that in this moment, I feel very obedient. For the first time in my life, I really feel obedient, you know, because I share the reasons why. That's also true. I think that it's useful to use a mask. I mean, it's also a reflection. It's not just a blind obedience. But and around me, I see a lot of things happening because there are a lot of gathering of people, not just about active citizenship, I mean, you know. In this sense, I speak about us as me as an artist. What I can do in this moment? And probably, as you say, it's not necessary to reply, but it's something that
I think it will definitely affect all of us and our practices and what happens next, because it's really heavy, this thing, like experience, and we don't know for how long it goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're in the middle of it now.
We.
No.
and some things are here to stay, like the for sure, like the increased use of internet, for sure a lot of things, also working from a lot will change. This is not going to go away.
No.
Maybe it's the right moment for to be tested now. And it seems for several things it's working. So yeah, and we will wake up in a new reality when COVID is gone.
Huh. Well, we are slowly moving towards this new reality. I don't think there will be a moment. It's done now. No.
But in relation to how many things will still be public and in what way, or how many things are just kind of pushed into a more private way of even like the very banal and simple things, like the meetings and the, you know.
Well, there's gonna be a moment where we need to reclaim this outside again, because we are very much prohibited to be there, and it's very constrained and it's very controlled and it's very, and there I foresee a reaction, I think, because
But then, for example, about what we were saying before about the limits, the limits would be really more visible, probably.
They are.
Yeah.
Already. Yeah.
They are, actually, of course. Yeah.
It's also maybe a matter of what we all do and all the time now. We have done also in conversation is an attempt to explicit what we mean by art or being an artist. It's I think a lot of what we say and do is that an attempt to explicit something about what this word means, because as you said, it's easy, it's the easiest to use the word now, because you but when we explicit now that we try to define how we could work in the future, post-COVID or trans-COVID future. This is, for me, it's striking how we talk about this, about the kind of, let's put it a little bit hard, weight that we put upon ourselves. It made me think what you said, I want to go back to drawing. This is not in public space. Okay, you can go out and draw in public space. I don't know, maybe. But in a way, it's an intimate thing you do with yourself and your drawing. But since we take this mandate, and we said that to go out in public space, to make work happen in public space, we take upon us a lot of the weight, responsibility, that comes with this step. You don't necessarily have to do this, but we feel it's a path that we want to explore. But and then I want to bring this up because I want to, for maybe just a small moment, bring up the word of the mediator again, because I find this very important aspect, because of the confusion that the word art can hide. It's really a word that can hide a lot of confusion and make that good, because you can do a lot of things behind the word. And you can use the word to protect yourself for what you're doing, so that's good. But on the other hand, it also makes it easier to put things in the word art or artist, which maybe in the evolution of what of the practice could be more interesting to be outside of the practice of the artist or of art itself. And you said earlier, I don't want to be an educator, I want to be an artist. I don't want to be a mediator, I don't see myself as a mediator. You say I want to go back to drawing.
Just a second, and you say you are an ex-artist.
I say yes, yes. A former, retired.
Okay, so what about the mediator?
Yeah, that's well, because I find it an interesting matter to think about. What could happen if the mediator, not being an artist, could be valued more as a role in contemporary society and in the future. For instance, if you imagine a large theater with a lot of people working there, well, there will maybe be, I don't know, just a quick guess, of 70 people, maybe be 3 mediators or something. That if you really take to dramaturgs or public workers, 3. Well, maybe there should be more. Maybe this is a category of people in society where there should be more mediators to, I don't know, I really don't know, I really have no idea, but I find myself confronted with this matter where sometimes behind the word artist people project the fact that you're a mediator. And they consider this as a part of being an artist, as being the mediator between the public and the work, or between the public and the world. And I don't necessarily think this is a given. This could be a choice of the artist to be the mediator at the same time, but it doesn't have to be. And I think also this, in this continuous attempt to explicit what we personally mean by making work, I find this, we share, apparently share a feeling of responsibility towards the world. But I sense also a danger in trying to take this word, this weight upon ourselves and then to give the solutions also, because we have no solutions. Of course, we don't have the solutions.
That's exactly why I really believe in this Moebius strip. And that's what I'm saying. So if I will say now I withdraw, it's not I withdraw forever, but it's like now it's much better that I focus on me and try to really, take care of myself and do it through making again art through my drawings, because that's what the conditions enable me to do. So I can go back after. Let's think of it as a kind of system, feeding system. So I feed myself, then I can help others being fed. If I become dry, if I'm just exhausted to try to serve, then what is left?
But I, for example, I had completely this feeling during the first lockdown. During the first lockdown, it was the first time in my life I was really taking care about my body, my rhythms, what I ate, because I got exactly this feeling to say, okay, this is very important for self-care, because otherwise I cannot give any care to anyone. But I think it's really personal. Now I really feel that, I feel that I have to come out.
But can I say something? You took care, but you also censored yourself.
Yeah.
Because you didn't allow yourself to say, well, I'm very angry also about all that.
Yeah.
So you kept this.
Yeah.
Now you will take care by just drawing out.
Yeah. My new psychologist. I'm also psychologist.
We will keep on bringing you back around the table and support the responsibility. I mean, that's something we try to take on.
And at the end of the day, about what you are saying, Kasper, I also think that it's, and probably what also you are saying, Eleni, the fact that I think as artists working again with people, with participatory practice, with public space, etc., there are a lot of projections of people on us. That's for sure. Some that we accept and some that, but for example, in my own case, I feel that really, I think that apart from the responsibility, there is a drive that it's very personal and it's very subjective and it's very, it's a distance. So it's really egoistic drive to move forward and to know the people, to know the world, and this way I do it.
Curiosity.
Yeah, curiosity. And the fact that in some projects I feel also that I'm a mediator, in other projects, no. And so probably it's really about to claim also our position each time concerning each project, because in each project we are not the same. This is another fiction that you are always the same artist. It's not true.
There's,
I'm Anna and Raimondo, by the way. I didn't tell you at the very beginning, because yes, I'm starting to call myself. You can call me Anna and Raimondo, for example.
Yeah, but I also just mentioned it because I was thinking about the fact that we are sitting here at this, and the existence of Nadine gives us the possibility to have this conversation, to share this conversation, and this position of the mediator, Nadine as an example of a mediator, is fragilized also by the evolution of the perception in, let's say, right now in Belgium, of the position of the artist, where this idea we have to focus more on the artist, in subsidizing the artist. I have my doubts about this.
Is this the new direction?
That's the new direction of the Flemish government, is to give more focus to the artists themselves. And I really think that. It's always actually it's rarely explicited that the mediators have such an important position to, if you want to make something that's related to the context, that really is something of value to society, or that you believe in with your drive, then this position of the mediator can be so important to help you connect, to give you the space. And I hoped at the start of this past year that this was something that people would realize more now that Hatus had to close down. But actually, the inverse is a bit happening. You see, we have artists have been working, and the mediators were closed, the houses were closed, and there's all this. So, I hoped really that the government would say, "Oh, now we realize how important
feel it
is."
I mean, we feel it.
You feel it.
That half of the house and more are just closed and are not taking on that role. And actually, there is this continuous. They are also feeding works, and they need to take on the responsibility together with you. And that's not happening anymore. Mm-hmm. And, it's. I hope it can open all soon. We have come to the end of our conversation. There's still. 20 questions on the table.
If not 50.
But I think it's for another time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For the invisible communication. Yes.
Thank you to the listeners.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
There is no questions on the pad, so it's okay.
But it was very, thank you very much. It was really.
Yeah, I enjoyed it actually a lot.
Me too.
Yes, thank you very much.
No,
I had this feeling from the Skype meeting that it will go well.
Yeah.
Thank you everybody for your presence and proximity and the trust.
Yeah. No, nice. Thank you.
Okay. Stop.
Of the year.